Hi, this is Elizabeth Lynch of China Law and Policy, and welcome to our podcast. Perhaps not since Professor John DeFrancis, with his publication in the early 1960s of the 12-volume series of Mandarin Chinese textbooks, has anyone so revolutionized the study of Chinese like Michael Love. In 1999, while living in Beijing between high school and college, Michael became so frustrated with the time and effort it took to look up an unfamiliar character in a Chinese dictionary that he used his computer skills to create an electronic dictionary for his Palm Pilot. Soon, other students in his class were buying Palm Pilots just so they could use Michael's software. Upon his return to the States and while he was studying computer science at Harvard, Michael founded Pleco, an online Chinese-English, English-Chinese dictionary where students of the language can look up Chinese characters via pinyin, handwriting, or camera phone. Michael, the CEO and founder of Pleco, sat down with China Law and Policy to discuss the future of Pleco, its impact on Chinese language learning, and obstacles he faces as an internet company doing business in China. Thank you for joining us today, Michael. So after more than 10 years in the business, where are we today with Pleco?
Well, we've kind of just finished what I'd call a major transitional period, basically because smartphones themselves and mobile devices themselves have just gone through a huge transition. Most of our efforts the last 3 to 4 years have been focused on getting from the sort of old-fashioned PDAs, Windows Mobile Palm Pilots, to iPhone and Android, to the modern devices people want now. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of changes built in. I mean, it gives us a lot more capabilities, obviously much faster hardware, much, better, bigger screens, but also, different interfaces. Now people are controlling devices with their fingers instead of styluses. That has really forced us to redesign a lot of things, rethink the way we do a lot of things. There's better internet connectivity. These have all influenced the design of our software. So I wouldn't say been treading water, but we've been spending a lot of time dealing with those issues and not so much time lately on expanding our notions of what we can do with electronic Chinese learning. And now we're getting back in the direction of new stuff again. We're thinking about interesting new features we can add, new things we can do with flashcards, new ways of looking up characters. We're shifting back from this, platform-focused phase to a phase where we're more thinking about Chinese again, honestly, which is really much more fun. As far as how Pleco is doing, we have in several orders of magnitude more customers than we've ever had before. The App Store is awesome. Android Market is pretty awesome. People looking for a Chinese dictionary with a few buttons can download our app, try it out. Our reach has expanded enormously, and that's great. We make apps because we like people to use our apps. We want to help people learn Chinese, really, and if we can do that with more people, that's great. So we love this transformation, and now that we finally are up to date, now that we're on iPhone and Android and iPad and all this other stuff, we can once again turn back to, improving Chinese learning for everyone.
So you guys, Pleco just released its Droid app. Is downloadable now for the Droid?
Yeah, Android Market, just Pleco. It should be the first thing that comes up, though. Since Pleco is actually a type of fish, there are a few other type of common aquarium catfish. There are actually a few apps related to the catfish that will come up too. But the first app, if you look for Pleco and Android Market, should be ours.
So in terms of some of the other technology, you have now OCR software that can recognize a character if you take a picture of it. Can you tell us more about that?
This is something that has been floating around actually as an idea for years and years and years. People were writing us way back when the first Palm Trio ship with a little dinky VGA camera you could use for, taking postage stamp sized photos that didn't really look very good. People have been saying, hey, wouldn't it be great if I take a picture of a character and look it up for a long time. And finally, summer 2010, Apple released a new version of iOS that added, for the first time, a really good direct way to get at what the phone's camera was seeing and do stuff with it. And that, combined with the latest generation of mobile processors and the speed we get on a modern iPhone 4, iPhone 4S, made it possible for us to use a sort of algorithm that had been floating around for a long time to instantaneously look up Chinese characters in the phone camera. So the technology of Chinese OCR has been around for 10 years. People would use it on, you know, a flatbed scanner, just like with English, you put your Chinese paper on the scanner. But now... Yeah, but now the cameras are good enough, the operating system is good enough, the processor is good enough, and we can do this on an iPhone or an Android phone, and we can do it instantly. So it's great. It's, you know, Arthur C. Clarke said any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And I mean, the first time we got it working in our labs, that was kind of the reaction. It was, holy crap, now we can point cameras at phones, point cameras at things, look up characters. It was, yeah, it's great. It's easily the best selling, most popular feature we've ever offered. It's been wonderful.
So, I mean, it seems like everybody I know who speaks Chinese or is studying Chinese uses Pleco. How many customers or downloads have you had? I mean, how big is your customer base, if you know?
I mean, it's tough to tell exactly because we get, particularly on iOS, we get download numbers, we don't get usage numbers, and we don't really believe in, you know, we don't believe in app metrics, we don't believe in collecting data about people's usage of our app because it's kind of a privacy violation, and a lot of our customers, for political or other reasons, are rather privacy sensitive, so we don't collect any metrics, we don't measure what you're doing with the app, and so for that reason, we don't exactly know how many people are actively using Pleco day to day, but just based on our download numbers and, you know, anecdotal reports and so forth, it's in the high 6 to low 7 figures.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. So right now, what do you see? I mean, you mentioned a little bit of what you want to focus now with Pleco, where you want to take it. But what do you see as the future of it? I mean, do you think there'll be a translation tool on the level of Google Translate or hopefully something better than that?
I mean, Google Translate is sort of in a different... It's a bit of a different field than what we're doing. They're really about making it so you don't have to learn Chinese.
Right, right.
We don't want to... We're not... You know, that's neat. That's neat. And for a lot of people who don't have the time, don't want to learn Chinese, who want to communicate in a dozen different languages, you know, that's great. We're all for lowering barriers to communication. But we're really only... We've only ever been focused on people learning Chinese. And for them, we actually think that just sentence translation is a bit counterproductive. If you have if there's even one or two words in a sentence that you do know, then the mental act of remembering those words is going to be really good for you in learning your Chinese. And so we love the idea of, you know, make it easy for you to look up words you don't know, piece together things, but we want you to have to go through some sort of a mental translation operation yourself to put this together, to think about it, to sort of improve your own Chinese abilities, and that's all we've ever been focused on. So our future plans mostly revolve around that. We've got a lot of new things we're working on for flashcards. We want to have sort of a better type of audio flashcard. We look at lessons like Pimsleur that will sort of teach you Chinese through audio prompting and sort of a set pattern. We think we can improve on that with something more interactive. We're looking at other ways of just practical things like synchronizing flashcards between your iPad and your iPhone, which is actually really complicated for a variety of reasons. And, you know, better dictionaries, better content. We've been actually thinking about commissioning our own versions of a few types of content. For example, we have never found a really, really good comprehensive Chinese menu reader. We'd love to have some kind of a guide, just like tens of thousands of Chinese dishes and what they are. And it's funny because sometimes the same, you know, poetic Chinese name will apply to one thing in one area and another thing in another area. And we need to, you know, we want to get it in all of them. So a comprehensive menu reader is, we think it'd be a great thing. It'd be a great use for OCR, certainly. And since nobody's developed one, we're thinking about commissioning one ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I just want to jump off of something you mentioned about when we compared Pleco to Google Translate, and you were saying that Google Translate is not a tool for people to learn Chinese, and that Pleco is very much a tool for people to learn Chinese, and in a way, I mean, it's been a huge innovation in the way that students learn Chinese. But it isn't without its controversy, specifically in the way that foreign students learn Chinese characters. And so I'm wondering if you could just give, for our listeners who don't speak Chinese or have never studied Chinese, if you could just give a little bit of background about how, before Pleco, someone would look up a character in a dictionary. For example, let's say I'm reading a newspaper in Chinese, I see a character, I don't recognize. There's no romanization for it, so I don't even know how to pronounce it. How, before Pleco, did somebody look that up in a dictionary?
Well, the main way was using a system actually developed in the 18th, 17th, well, it may have been around for even longer than that, called radicals. So there are a couple hundred basic pieces that are the closest thing Chinese has to an alphabet, basic little pieces of characters, most of them tied to old-fashioned pictograms, that between them, pretty much all Chinese characters are assembled from some combination of these couple hundred basic pieces. So what you used to do is you would find the first one of these pieces, and there are a whole set of rules for that, the most prominent, the most important one of these pieces in a character. You'd look at the character, you'd figure out what that piece was. Sometimes you have to guess about that. And then you would look up in a very complicated index, you'd get a list of all the characters that contained that piece as their primary radical. And those would be grouped usually by the number of strokes that are not part of that radical, and then further sorted by the type of stroke that was the first stroke. So basically you have to figure out what the most prominent component is to this character, look that up in a very long, very small printed little index, go to the right page with a list of all the characters containing that radical, count the number of strokes, so you have to know Chinese stroke order pretty well and Chinese stroke breakdowns pretty well, count the number of strokes in character outside of the radical, find that section of the index, and then scan through this long list of characters to find the character you're looking for. So even when you're pretty good at this, it usually takes, 30 seconds to a minute, and then you gotta flip the dictionary, find the actual thing. So it's painstaking, and it makes it really, really hard to read, or made it really, really hard to read a Chinese text that you didn't know.
Right, right. And in terms of the radical, the radical, just to clarify for our readers, often does give the character meaning. So, like, if you have the three water drops, you know that character probably is related to water. But with Pleco, because you can use either the stylus on the Palm Pilot or for the iPhone or the Droid, you can use your finger to draw the character, you don't need to identify the radical anymore. So you don't need to know which radicals have what meaning, and you don't necessarily need to know stroke order anymore, how the Chinese for thousands of years have written the character. Do you think Pleco is downplaying the traditional way in which one learns Chinese, and has there been any loss in not maybe forcing students of Chinese language to learn radicals or stroke order, if that's even happening?
I think the art of Chinese writing and Chinese calligraphy should not be as prominent a part of the Chinese language curriculum as it is. Because honestly, even Chinese people don't do that much anymore. For the last 20 years or so, at least, the majority of written Chinese has been written on computers. And when Chinese people compose Chinese text computers, they don't handwrite, they don't use a radical index, they actually just key in the romanized pronunciation of the thing they're trying to write. It turns out that, if you look at a Chinese computer keyboard, it looks like an American computer keyboard. It's the same kind of letter-based system. And that's way faster than anything character-based, with the exception of a specialized couple of input methods called Wubi and Sangjie that I won't get into. Most Chinese people write Chinese with an English language keyboard, and therefore don't really ever need to, well, hardly ever need to do anything with stroke order. And so the notion that American, European, other, foreign students of Chinese need to, even Chinese students of Chinese to some extent, need to learn to write really well is outdated. We don't handwrite anymore. We haven't been handwriting for decades. We use keyboards, and stroke order, it's an interesting historical item. It still has some relevance today in understanding how characters are built. Certainly it can help your understanding of characters if you build up some fluency with radicals, with the way characters constructed, with meanings of those pieces. But I don't think it's anywhere near as important to a Chinese curriculum as learning to speak, learning to read, learning to understand people say. And so, to the extent that Pleco is discouraging people from spending a lot of time early on in their Chinese studies learning to practice writing Chinese characters, I don't think we're hurting Chinese learning. I think we're helping people focus on the parts that really matter.
And do you have any idea about how how a tool like Pleco or other translation tools like NJSTAR for if you're on the computer, how that's being used today in colleges and high schools in the United States to teach Chinese. Do you have any idea about that?
A lot of that actually has to do with the changing nature of the Chinese teacher population in the U.S. In the very early days, it was a sort of a random accumulation. You had a lot of people who'd taken Chinese as a second language and, you know, knew enough and happened to be already teachers, so they do a little elective class at whatever school it was in Chinese. Then you had a bunch of, disgruntled expats who left China in the 80s or the 90s and were kind of set on this very old-fashioned way of teaching Chinese, who would, very, very focused on rote memorization, on practicing things over and over and over again, and just sort of felt like the best way to learn Chinese was the way they learned Chinese when they were kids, which we now would kind of consider outdated. I mean, we did the same things in the U.S. in those days, but we no longer do. Just very rote memorization-based. And recently, however, the last decade or so, younger people have started teaching Chinese. People have come over more recently, people with education degrees, people who have a more modern way of thinking about teaching the language. And so they've proven much more receptive to kind of a natural language approach to learning Chinese. They increasingly appreciate that you maybe shouldn't be quite so fixated on learning characters early. They appreciate the importance of exposing students to real-world reading materials, not just things that were in a textbook, sort of graded reading materials. They appreciate the importance of conversation practice. So Pleco, at least, I think we've always been more in the latter strategy. We've been from the very beginning about helping people work with real Chinese more easily, lowering that barrier. As far as other tools, like Google Translate. I mean, I don't really view Google Translate as a Chinese learning tool.
Right,
I view it
right.
more as a tool for people who don't know Chinese at all, or whose Chinese level is just not even close to what it would need to be to understand something to muddle through. In the early days of Pleco, I would sometimes run a Chinese language contract or some Chinese language document, which I wasn't really sure about my translation of. I'd run it through there to sort of check to make sure I wasn't missing something, and it's good for stuff like that, but it's not really a learning tool. It's more of a learning replacement, sort of mediocre translator to help you through stuff that you just aren't confident to do yourself.
And just to switch gears a bit. I should let listeners know we're in a bar doing this interview. But let's switch gears a bit and talk about your experiences in China and currently what Pleco is doing in China. Is Pleco used by, I guess, Chinese students learning English? And do you do a lot of business in China?
Actually, no. And there are two reasons for that. Part of it is that we've never targeted that market. In the early days, mostly because that there was so much piracy that it just didn't seem worth it. I mean, we literally had people selling our Palm OS software on CDs in Zhongguancun and, computer markets that looked so real that people would write us for technical support with this pirated copy of our software, because they didn't realize they bought a pirated copy. So we kind of dismissed it early on as, well, we're not going to make any money off this market anyway, so let them make their own software, kind of. As indeed a lot of Chinese software companies did. And more recently, it's just that we don't really think we can do it as well with the kind of materials we have. I mean, a Chinese-English dictionary for someone learning Chinese, you're going to want to have extremely extensive vocabulary coverage. You want any possible word they might encounter to be covered. But you don't need to be very detailed necessarily in the definitions. You maybe want a lot of example sentences, but you don't need to provide... You're not trying to provide a comprehensive listing of every English word you might use to translate this Chinese word. A Chinese person is looking at a Chinese-English dictionary as a way of, almost like a thesaurus, at least that's one of its functions, is I have this Chinese concept I want to translate in English. I don't necessarily need a comprehensive Chinese-English dictionary, because if it doesn't have this word, I'll type in another word and mean the same thing. But I really want it to give me all the different ways of saying this in English, all of the connotations of that, so I can... I can master the right way of doing this in English. So fundamentally, Chinese English and English Chinese dictionaries, people learning Chinese and people learning English are totally different, at least if they're nonprofit. And so we have focused all of our efforts on the people learning Chinese. Our software's features tailored to them. I mean, Chinese person doesn't need an OCR system to look up a character they don't know. They just type in its pronunciation because they know it. So I think while they seem like very similar operations, they're really different enough that it doesn't make sense for one company to focus on both. And so we don't.
Right. But in terms of your business, I mean, do you go back to China a lot with Pleco or?
I go back about once a year, meeting up with mostly with companies that we do licensing business with, companies that we get dictionaries from, companies we want to license more dictionaries from, companies that develop interesting technology we'd like to use. There's a little bit of a, you know, I can usually do some investigating too occasionally.
Are you guys good?
Yeah. Definitely at a bar. occasionally we'll run into somebody who's... into a product that has some interesting idea we want to either shamelessly copy or take inspiration from, because there is a little bit of overlap between the process of Chinese people learning English and English speakers learning Chinese, and occasionally we'll learn something from them, and I think they've gotten some ideas from us over the years, but mostly when I go to China, it's to talk to business partners.
And in terms, I mean, you've mentioned piracy, as one of the reasons why you, I mean, one of the reasons, the big reason seems to be that the Chinese audience, the product you're producing is really for foreigners studying Chinese, but you have mentioned piracy a little bit. I mean, has that been a problem for Pleco in China, or, and do you do anything about that, or?
It was, it depends on the product, actually. It was a huge problem for us with Windows Mobile in 2008 or so. We released a new version we'd been working on for 2 years, and it was pirated almost immediately, and that was a bummer, because it really did hurt our sales a lot. But on iPhone, there's really very little piracy problem, because any iPhone that hasn't been what's called jailbroken to run non-Apple approved apps basically can't run pirated software. It's impossible. There's no way to do it. The phone just will refuse to run a pirated app, and jailbreaking your iPhone violates your warranty. So we see very little piracy on iPhone, and I mean, Android, it's too early to know. We're hoping that we're hoping it'll take them a while to crack it and that it won't be widely pirated. But at the very least, on iPhone, there's very little loss due to piracy.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of, I mean, when, before the iPhone with the Windows-based one, and it was pirated almost immediately, I mean, as a business person doing business in China, I mean, what do you think, I mean, did that make you feel like you didn't want to be in the Chinese market, or, I mean, and what do you think can be done to change that, or you think it's inevitable?
I think at some point you have to provide a better value proposition. That's always been the issue with piracy. It's true with media, too. People will pay some money for the convenience of downloading your app legally and having updates, having support. I mean, the things that a pirated version simply can't provide are worth something to people. And in a lot of cases, it's a pricing and a convenience problem. People pirate TV series because there's no easy place for them to watch them online without ads. People pirate our software. People, you know, if our software couldn't be downloaded quite so easily, I think we'd see a lot more piracy because people would, you know, if our software was only offered in CD, say, people would pirate it because that was the only way to get it immediately. The problem is that the Chinese naturally place a much lower value on a given piece of content than Westerners do, just because of what they're used to paying for it. So even if a Westerner would consider our prices perfectly reasonable, a Chinese person might not. And so we have this awkward situation of how, you know, we'd have to make some sort of a Chinese market product priced at a level that a Chinese person would be comfortable with in order to keep them from pirating from us. And there have been certainly attempts at doing that. But really, for us, we're happy with our primarily Western customer base. And really, the reason we're worried about piracy in China is because it makes it easier for honest Westerners who might otherwise pay us for our products to pirate them.
Yeah.
We don't really care. You know, Chinese people using pirated versions of our software, we don't think they were going to pay for it anyway.
Right.
But Westerners might have. And so we want to make it just hard enough that they won't pirate it.
Yeah. And in terms of talking about piracy and some of the issues with Chinese law, I mean, as an online commerce operation, do you have any experience with internet censorship or any of those kind of issues that have been a lot in the press lately with China?
We have never been blocked. We've taken certain preventative measures to make sure that things that might cause us to be Great Firewalled would be isolated. I mean, our discussion forum site is on a different domain name, different IP address, so if the Chinese government ever took issue with something somebody posted on a public forums, their block of that site would not prevent people from accessing our official company site and downloading our software and so on. So we've taken some measures against that, but they haven't really been necessary so far. There is a little bit of an issue just because of the network topology in China with the Great Firewall. It is hard for a Western company to offer good download speeds for people downloading files, downloading software in China. There are some very expensive Chinese distribution systems that will work around that. We haven't yet seen fit to pay, seen that as being a good value for us. Because they generally be tailored to much larger companies and they cost a lot of money and we can't really afford it. So most people in China download our software from Hong Kong and get so-so performance, but good enough that people don't seem to complain too much. But it would be nice for us if it were easier for a foreign company offering relatively innocuous downloads to have a server in China so people could download our stuff more quickly. So the existence of ICP numbers and the difficulties of getting a website past the firewall where you can distribute high-speed downloads, media, etc. to Chinese people, that's been a bit of a hassle, but that's about the only issue we've had with Chinese censorship so far.
Okay. And just in terms, this problem with not having the quicker download speeds and the fact that you do have to do a little bit of a workaround for the blog and which is basically questions and answers about the software. I mean, have you seen any changes in the Chinese government's approach to the internet over the 10, 12 years that you've been doing business online, or has it been relatively constant? Because a lot of the press has been talking about the increased laws that China has been passing to regulate the internet, but has that affected foreign business, you think?
A little bit. It means that we need to use China market specific means to reach our customers. I mean, we have a Twitter feed and a Facebook feed, and those do absolutely no good for our customers in China because they can't access Twitter or Facebook. So we need to have a workaround. We need to have a Weibo blog too. Chinese customers can't access YouTube, so we have to have alternate videos for them. That didn't used to be a problem years ago because they weren't quite so aggressive in blocking social networking, blocking open sort of content sharing sites. So that's been a bit of a hassle. But, I mean, beyond that, as far as the network topology problems I mentioned, download speeds, those have been about as much of a hassle for the last 10 years, just sort of the nature of the Chinese internet. So, it's a bit harder to reach our customers. It's a bit more effort to share content, but it hasn't changed for our purposes all that much.
Okay. Well, I think that does it for now, Michael. Thank you very much for a very interesting and thought-provoking interview. Thank you.